feel Rome has shown up in the Palestine, as it has all over the known world, and it has conquered the Palestine and is now in the process of imposing what they called in the first century Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome. And the way they established that was to crush anybody who resisted the agenda of Imperial Rome, which, oddly enough, the Jews were doing, because part of the agenda was, oh, by the way, you just have to refer to the emperor as God himself, or the Son of God, and all that sort of thing. And the Jews were going, eh, not on my watch, we're not. And so it's on, right? And so Rome is going to come in and impose its version of peace by destroying, you know, whoever stands in their way and whoever doesn't toe the line, which was the majority of the Jewish population in the Palestine. And so towns are being burned to the ground, and buildings are being razed, like the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed in the middle of the first century, and then it was razed to the ground in the second century of the Common Era. Families are being torn apart. Their households, their livelihoods are being disintegrated and destroyed. And so here's this guy, Jesus, in the midst of all this turmoil and violence and the imposition of peace, is running around the Palestine and sharing stories that are really intended to challenge the idea that Rome is who's got it going on. You know, that Rome is the ultimate authority. And Jesus tells these weird little parabolic stories that are intended to say there's something bigger going on here. And of course, you can imagine, once word gets out, especially back to the powers that be, that isn't going to be received very well. But that's later in the story. In the meantime, imagine that Jesus, with his friends, they're traveling around. He's an itinerant preacher and wisdom teacher and healer and all this good stuff. And they're bunking down for an evening, and they're doing what they always do. They've gathered for a meal around a campfire. Remember, this is Luke's gospel. You could describe Jesus as sharing a meal, leaving a meal, or looking for a meal. Okay? This is what he does. So they're sitting at the campfire, and word has gotten out that he and some of his friends have gathered, you know, sort of on the outskirts, say, of some town. And so some of the families who have lost everything have come out to the campfire to join them. And one of the questions that arises in the course of the conversation, I mean, yeah, they'll be talking about their families and how are the kids, you know, growing up and all that kind of stuff, but really what's on their minds is, how are we supposed to live in the midst of this madness that is Imperial Rome imposing its agenda on our lives? How are we supposed to do this? You know that had to come up in the conversation around the campfire. And one of the questions, or the way it might have been articulated, was at some point one of the men might have said something like, why would we bother working our entire lives only to lose everything crushed by debt? Because it's one of the ways that Rome conquered, you know, get everybody in debt. Good question, isn't it? And so the banter is flying around the campfire, and somewhere in the midst of that, Jesus tells a story. And it probably goes more like this. Jesus says, there was a rich person who had a great deal of money, murmuring around the campfire. They know who he's talking about. They're rolling their eyes. So, says Jesus, this rich person says, I shall invest my money so that I may sow, reap, plant, and fill my storehouses with produce so that I may lack nothing. murmuring around the campfire. Jesus goes on. These were the things that he was thinking in his heart. And that very night, he died. Silence. And then one of the women, sort of in the shadows away from the fire, begins to giggle. And then somebody else picks up on her giggling. And the giggling becomes contagious. And pretty soon, everybody, men, women, children, sitting around this campfire with Jesus, are roaring with laughter. Jesus is telling a joke. And they get it. Now, the question today is, do we? We live in this acquisitive culture. I use that fancy word because it makes it sound better than greedy. But they're the same thing. So we live in this acquisitive culture that defines us by our stuff. Our homes, our cars, our stock portfolios, if we even have one. And of course, if we don't have one, that also defines us, right? And how we, on our own, will secure our own future. That's the culture in which we live. And the operative words in this story that Jesus tells go like this. My crops, my barns, my grain, my goods, my soul. Do you get the joke? And then he dies, which we're all going to do. And part of the question, or maybe the core of the question, and again, he's telling this story. This particular version that I shared with you is from the Gospel according to Thomas, which may, in fact, be closer to an original version of this story that Jesus tells. Pretty succinct, pretty pointed, and in that context, pretty funny. But it requires that you and I get the joke as well. I mean, you know, we accumulate so much stuff. I can't tell you how many conversations with people I have as we get older. And if you haven't been around much, stick around. You'll experience this too. Now with homes and apartments filled with stuff, more stuff than we know what to do with. We get rid of stuff, and then what do? We get more stuff. I mean, and it's almost, and we don't want to believe it, but we live in a culture that will define us by our stuff. My stuff, my house, my yard, my car, my job, my money. You see where this is going? And the Christian tradition, as it's embodied today in our Eucharistic prayer, in the language of prayer C, galaxies, suns, the planets in their courses, and this fragile earth, our island home, is designed specifically as an antidote to this culture of acquisitiveness and greed in which we live. You and I are invited to capture and be captured by a larger vision, larger than our stuff, larger than our town, larger than our state, larger than our community, in some ways even larger than our world. where we live in relationship to a place that is, in fact, fragile. And you and I live lives that are fragile as well. Ask anybody who's been through some surgery lately. And rather than falling into the despair, right? Vanity of vanities. What a great, I love that. All is vanity. Yeah, go get 'em, cowboy. Our tradition says, hey, guys and gals, there's something bigger going on here. I mean, this was the point of all of Jesus' stories. There's something bigger than Imperial Rome. There's something bigger than, you know, our jobs or our families. There's something bigger going on here. And we're in relationship with that something bigger. So that we don't have to fall unknowingly and unconsciously into the trap of my home, my car, my stuff, my family, my job, my money, that all of it comes from the source of all things, this fragile earth, our island home. Now, if you go on in the Eucharistic prayer, and I'd like you to turn to page 372, You'll see at the top of the page there, we identify God, Lord God of our fathers, and here at St. Peter's we add our mothers. And so you'll hear a whole laundry list of names of our forefathers and foremothers. And then it says, deliver us from the presumption of coming to this table for solace only and not for strength, for pardon only and not for renewal. Coming to church and gathering as a faith community, as we do here at St. Peter's, is not just about us getting our cookies and milk and going home, as I like to call it. Oh, give me my cookies and milk, give me my bread and wine or my grape juice, and poof, off I go, and I'm just going to go live my life the way I live my life, and leave me alone, thank you very much. Tried it for years, still try it on. It doesn't get me too far. So coming here is not just for solace, not just to feel better. It's about gaining strength for the journey and to remain connected to this larger vision, this fragile earth, our island home. And then it goes on. Deliver us also from the presumption of coming to this table, the table meaning the altar, when we gather around for communion. Deliver us from the presumption of coming to this table for pardon only and not for renewal. This isn't just about being, you know, bad boys and girls that are selfish and self-centered, big shock there, who, you know, need on some deep and abiding level to be forgiven. And, oh, by the way, that forgiveness has already been granted, thank you very much. But that we're also here to be renewed, just like we're here to be strengthened for the journey in order to stay with the larger vision of a God who created this fragile earth, our island home. Now, we as a faith community are as prone to going down the rabbit hole as anybody, and so, you know, we've, on some level, we've got to, you know, stay honest with ourselves. Here's a quick story about how the church can go down the rabbit hole too. In the 14th century, custodians of the Catholic faith declared war on cats in Europe's cities. Have you ever heard this before? This is actually true. Yeah. The word got out. Cats are staying away. They're not messing with us because they know where this is going to go. I believe the word fanatical is a good descriptor of this. And the churches certainly done that on occasion. So, these diabolical animals, these cats, these instruments of Satan, as they were described in the 14th century, they were crucified, they were skewered, they were skinned alive, they were chucked into bonfires. Have you heard this story? It's true. Okay, it goes on. The church also did this with reformers, kind of treated reformers and cats the same way. Interesting connection there. But the upshot is that the rats, who were liberated from their worst enemy, came to rule the cities, and the Black Death, brought by the rats, killed 30 million people. You and I need to be captured by a larger vision. Galaxies, suns, the planets in their courses, and this fragile Earth, our island home. And to the extent that we can stay with that vision and encourage each other to continue to lean into and claim that vision, which is exactly what we do when we gather for communion, then you and I have a chance. Then the world may have a chance as well.